What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Welcome to Creature Feature, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host of Mini Parasites, Katie Golden, and today on the show, it's another listener questions episode. You can write to me your questions, and I answer them. If you have any questions that you would like to hear answered on the show, or maybe I'll answer them by email, you can send them to me at creaturefeaturepod@gmail.com. I got some really good questions this week, so let's get right into them. Here we go. This is from a friend of the show, Lydia Bug. She writes, I'm not sure if you've ever covered this in detail before, but I would love to hear more about the process of butterflies going from worm to pile of goo to pretty bug. So thank you, Lydia. The transformation from a butterfly to, well, no, it goes the other way, doesn't it? The transformation from a caterpillar to a butterfly is really fascinating and a little disgusting. So caterpillars are butterfly larvae. Their essential purpose is to eat as much as possible to get fat and to fuel the transformation into a butterfly. So caterpillars typically eat plant matter, although large blue butterfly caterpillars eat meat, specifically ant larvae, by tricking their way into ant nests. If you're curious to hear about these little carnivore caterpillars, we discussed this in more detail on the recent episode called Animal Lector. So, caterpillars will eat and eat and eat until they are all fueled up for their transformation. They will build a cocoon if they are a moth species, or a chrysalis if they are a butterfly species. So, a cocoon is typically made out of silk that the moth has excreted. It is, in fact, where we get silk from via silk moths. So chrysalises are actually made out of the top layer of skin of the caterpillar. So the caterpillar will attach itself to a branch via a bit of silk and then wiggle out of its top layer of skin, which hardens into a chrysalis. So inside the cocoon or the chrysalis, the larva will actually completely dissolve into goo. So it is essentially digesting itself into a sort of soup ready to be rearranged into its final form. So the way it does this is by preserving groups of blueprint cells called imaginal discs, which have DNA instructions for growing into body parts fueled and built by the dissolved soup that it turned its old body into. So is this a transformation, or is it more of like a death and rebirth? So after all, it has turned itself almost entirely into goop. Like if you cut open a cocoon or a chrysalis at the right time, all you'll find is this zesty paste. I guess I don't know if it's zesty because I've never tried it. Anyways, researchers have found that adult moths can retain the memories of their former larval selves. So caterpillars were taught to fear an odor by pairing it with a mild electric shock. Then, after the caterpillars metamorphosized into moths, the researchers tested to see if they still feared the smell that they were trained to hate as caterpillars, and in fact, they found that they did. So the theory is that some of the cells preserved during the sort of supification that the larva goes through are actually neural cells that retain the same structures. Or possibly there's some kind of epigenetic change that carries on into its adult form. Still, it's an incredibly weird process that I think we've just kind of grown up to think it's normal because butterflies are everywhere. They're beautiful, innocent-looking creatures. And we kind of don't think about how they turn themselves into goo and get reborn and are haunted by their old memories. Kind of a nightmarish Ship of Theseus situation. On to the next listener question. What's going on with bees? We're terrified about them disappearing, but I haven't heard anything about them recently. This is from Feminist Killjoy on Twitter. So bees, I love bees, I love honey, and I love all the variety of bee species out there. I don't like getting stung by bees, but to be honest, it's only happened to me once, and that was my fault. I felt a bee land on my head, so I was trying to like get whatever it was off my head, and the bee felt like I was attacking it and stung me. Entirely my bad. So bees. Starting around 2007, people started to freak out about colony collapse disorder, which is the strange phenomenon where bees abandon a colony and its queen. So it's become an increasing problem, and the cause is mysterious, but it's thought to maybe have something to do with pesticides, pathogens, maybe parasites, or malnutrition, or habitat loss. So this is an unfortunate phenomenon that has been occurring in domesticated honeybees. While there have been increased cases of colony collapse disorder, an important note is that honeybees are kind of like the cows of the insect world. We have selected honeybees for their increased honey production and decreased aggression. They are not actually native to North America, and they are likely originally from Africa or Asia from tens of thousands of years ago when we first started domesticating them. While I do love honeybees and I love honey, they are technically invasive species in many parts of the world, given that we have domesticated them. And they are only a small fraction of the number of bee species out in the world, and a fraction of the pollinators who help our crops and plants and planet. So I'm not saying that colony collapse disorder is not a problem. I mean, it is, especially for beekeepers and if you like honey. But there is a distinction between there being a problem with honeybees, who are essentially tiny flying cows, and they're important agricultural pollinators as well as honey producers. But still, their populations are probably going to be fine. Meanwhile, we have problems that we are facing with wild native bees, who are both important pollinators for agriculture as well as for native plants, and their populations are much more under threat. So firstly, honeybees are not endangered at the moment. Colony collapse disorder is alarming and very troublesome for apiaries and, you know, if you like bees, but their populations are doing all right. I think it is important to find out why exactly colony collapse disorder is happening, because that is good information to know, and that could be important for conservation for not just domesticated bees, but for wild bees as well. But speaking of wild native bees, they are critical for protecting ecosystems, and their populations are in far more danger than honeybees. So there are over 3,500 species of wild bees in North America, and they are much more likely to face extinction than the honeybee. Pollution, pesticides, light pollution, habitat destruction, all of these things really do threaten these native bee species. So there is, if you're interested, right, in the health of native bees, there is a particularly adorable citizen science action you can take part in if you are concerned about wild bee populations. Bumblebeewatch.org is where you can upload images of bumblebees that you've found and the location and date to help conservationists keep track of bumblebee populations. There are certain species of bumblebees who are endangered, such as the rusty patched bumblebee. And by providing photos as well as location and date information, you are giving researchers new locations to survey for possible bumblebee populations to keep track of. And honestly, who doesn't love watching bumblebees? They are easily one of my favorite types of bees. They are so fumbly and bumbly, just like their name implies. According to all known laws of aviation, there is no way that a bumblebee should be able to fly. Its wings are too small to get its fat little body off the ground. The bumblebee, of course, flies anyways. Okay, no, that's actually just the first few lines of the famous movie, Bee Movie, starring Seinfeld. It's not actually scientifically accurate. Bumblebees, as well as bees, can certainly fly according to every law of aviation or aerodynamics and biology. They're just very round and very cute, and I love them.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Next listener question. How did birds develop hollow bones? Did their ancestors adapt that way before they flew or afterwards, according to the fossil records? And this is from L.S. Grieger. This is a great question. The short answer is that they did evolve before flight. These hollow bones evolved before flight. But to understand why, let's first talk about what we mean by hollow bones. Are they just tubes with nothing inside? So first let's talk about mammalian bones, like the bones that we have in our body. Our mammalian bones are full of bone marrow. It is a tissue with blood vessels that produces red and white blood cells. Surrounding the bone marrow is a layer of spongy bone called cancellous bone. And layered over that is a tough outer layer of compact bone. So birds have bones that are not entirely hollow, but are in fact full of air pockets. So imagine a really bubbly sourdough bread, you know, the kind that's really delicious, but you can't really make a sandwich out of because it's got too many holes in it. So the cross-section of a bird bone looks almost exactly like that, with struts and air pockets inside. These are called pneumatized, and they allow the bird's bones to be lightweight and don't contain bone marrow. But if you think about it, this makes them actually very structurally stable, because if it was just a hollow tube, you could crush that quite easily. But because it's just full of sort of these bubbles and then these struts of bone, it is much more structurally stable. But birds do need bone marrow for blood cell production. So some of their bones are not hollow and actually contain bone marrow. In some species of birds, none of their bones are hollow. Like all of their bones contain marrow, such as penguins or some diving birds like auks, who actually can fly. Penguins, of course, can't fly. Auks can fly, but they can also swim. Some flightless birds, like ostriches, still have some hollow bones, such as their femurs. Even though these bones contain air pockets, the struts inside of the bones actually make them really strong, and that's how they can support the ostrich's weight. Also, hollow bones are not just useful for flight, but also for thermoregulation, meaning keeping your temperature at a something that is suitable for you, as well as respiration, which sounds really weird. Why would bones help one breathe better? But we'll talk about that. So, hollow, or maybe a more scientific term, pneumatized bones are actually connected to the bird's respiration system. Birds have multiple air sacs in addition to their lungs, and these air sacs are connected to the bird's hollow bones, and the bones, these hollow spaces in the bones, can actually increase their air intake capacity. So, given that pneumatized or hollow bones have multiple benefits outside of just helping with flying, it then makes more sense that these hollow bones evolved before flight, just as feathers had evolved before flight. So Allosaurus, which was a large T-Rex-like dinosaur, had some hollow bones long before dinosaurs had any aspirations of flight. They had hollow bones along their neck vertebrae and back, and they were thought to help aid in respiration with that handy extra airspace. So like the dinosaur would breathe in, fill these air sacs, and then some of the air could be in these air pockets in the bone. So increasing the volume of air that it could take in, which might be really important to give this dinosaur an edge in terms of being able to chase after prey without, you know, having to catch its breath or to just function as a large animal that needs a lot of oxygen. So evolution is a really amazing roller coaster ride with twists and turns. Sometimes you start out with one adaptation that's for a specific purpose, but then it can later be used for an even more fantastic purpose like flight.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Next listener question. What do you think of ancient folks mistaking elephant skulls for monsters and coming up with stories of the Cyclops? I always thought that was neat. Do you have a favorite, this real animal was probably the inspiration for this mythical beast sort of thing? From Blake Rogers. So I love this story. I have seen an elephant skull in a museum. I actually remember thinking exactly that it looks like a Cyclops skull. The hole that looks like an eye socket is actually its large nasal cavity that its trunk connects to. But it's so huge, and it really does look like a big hole for an eye. The actual eye sockets are really small, and they're harder to notice. So it makes sense that we would see this one big hole and think, oh, this is where a giant eye would go on this giant skull. So I can see that Greek sailors might think this was a monster that wanted to eat them. But I have many favorite, kind of like oopsies, we got this animal wrong, or like taking a part of another animal, a real animal, and thinking that it was a monster or mythical creature. So one example of a bone reconstruction gone terribly wrong is the Magdeburg unicorn, which was made in the 17th century and is featured at the Museum für Naturkunde Magdeburg, Germany. I'm really sorry, Germany, if I'm pronouncing Magdeburg wrong. Maybe it's Magdeburg. So this reconstruction has a long tail, two legs, no arms, and a skull with a giant horn on its forehead. It is the goofiest looking fossil recreation ever made. Just like Google Magdeburg unicorn. It's amazing. I can imagine that this was probably made by someone like after eating ergot infested bread, huffing mercury laden makeup. I don't know. It makes no sense. It has the skull of an actual woolly rhino, which was a real animal that is extinct. It has the horn of a narwhal, so the horn of a narwhal is actually a tusk. It's a long tooth, not a horn. And it has the legs of a woolly mammoth. So three unfortunate dead animals who did not deserve to be so disrespected. So speaking of narwhal teeth, that long pointed tooth that has been mistaken for horns, which, you know, it's easy to see why that mistake is made. It's something that's coming out of the narwhal's head. It does not look like a long tooth or a tusk. These tusks were often thought to be unicorn horns before the 18th century. These unicorn horns were sold to royalty because of their supposed curative properties. They would shave off small pieces of the horns and mix them with drinks or use them to protect themselves against being poisoned. So there's no science to narwhal tusks being useful to prevent poisoning. So please don't just try to like chew on a narwhal tusk to cure yourself after you ate some ergot and huffed some mercury. But, you know, Europeans had no idea, and narwhal tusks came from traders who were only too happy to capitalize on their mystical reputation. So that'll do it for our quick little listener questions episode. No animal sound of the week. I will save that for next week when I have a guest. But just a refresher for last week's mystery animal sound. The hint was that this is a bird who is often plagiarized. And here is the sound. So if you think you know who is making that sound, you can write to me at creaturefeaturepod@gmail.com. You can also write to me your questions, and I will try my best to answer them either through email or on the show, like I did this time. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you're enjoying the show and you leave a rating or review, I read all of them, and I appreciate every rating. It really does help me out, helps the show out, and makes me feel good. And thank you to the Space Cossacks for their super awesome song, Exolumina. Creature Features is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts like the one you just heard, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or hey, guess what? Wherever you listen to your favorite shows, I don't judge you. You do you, man. You do you. See you next Wednesday.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.